Hello, and welcome to the Immersive Chemistry Podcast, a podcast which examines the intersection of chemistry, chemical engineering, game design, educational sciences, and technology. In each episode, we explore the impact of immersive learning research on these fields through interviews and discussion. I'm your host, Tim Gallagher, and I'm joined by my co-host, Jesse Dominguez Alfaro. Jesse, how are you today?
Fine, thank you, Tim. I am doing well. And you, how are you?
I'm also doing very well.
Almost weekend.
Exactly.
Okay, Tim, so today we will have a nice interview, right? With Tom van Herven, who is the coordinator of the Charmin project. We will be hearing that, right?
That's correct. I recorded this with Tom not so long ago at a network-wide event, which was a chance for everybody who is working on the Charmin project, which all our audience members will learn more about in a second, where we managed to find 10 or 20 minutes to sort of have a discussion about what the Charmin project is. Tom sort of introduces it and discusses his sort of vision for the project in general. So I think, we'll go and play that interview now, and we can have a bit of a discussion about it afterwards.
Great.
So Tom, I guess we can just start with maybe a little bit of your background.
All right. So I'm a chemical engineer by training. I did my PhD on solid waste management, heavy metal recycling. So basically in the environmental area of chemical engineering. And since, let's say, 10, 11 years, I'm a professor in the chemical engineering department at University of Leuven, where I'm teaching a couple of courses on environmental engineering, also process intensification, chemical process intensification, which is basically the core of my research group. So what is process intensification? We're trying to intensify chemical processes that have been existing for many, many years with new technologies that have come on the market, like ultrasound technology, microwave technology, new types of light sources for photochemical reactions and so forth.
Okay, very interesting. And you are also, so the project lead, I think, is the name of your role with the Charmin network. Maybe you can explain what Charmin is.
Right. Charmin is quite an unusual project. The extended title of the project is European Training Network for Chemical Engineering Immersive Learning, which if you try out a little bit the acronyms, you come up with Charmin, and we liked the Charmin acronym as being a charming acronym. So basically, why is it a kind of a special project? Because it's something that is very multidisciplinary and very out of the comfort zone for many of the partners. This is a training network devoted to new immersive tools for the sake of chemical engineering learning, which means that we have partners involved in the project with three types of background. We have chemical engineers, of course, for content. We have the psychology, instruction psychology people that have knowledge on how to transfer knowledge or how to transfer content to people that have to learn. And then we have the computer scientists that are able to develop these immersive tools. Are they able to develop games, artificial reality, or augmented reality and virtual reality?
Maybe you can list, I know there's a few different organizations that are involved in the project. Can you tell me a little bit about who is involved, maybe as the beneficiary organizations and also the partner organizations?
Right, exactly. We make the distinction between beneficiary organization and partner organizations because beneficiaries are the partners that host PhD students, whereas the partner organizations host for a very short time, 1-2 months, some of the researchers, some of the PhD students at their premises, but they're basically not having any of the PhD students on their payroll. So the beneficiary institutions, we have 8 of them. 5 of them are academic institutions. 3 of them are in industries or companies. The academic institutions, Leuven, but also Newcastle University, Utrecht University, IT University of Copenhagen, and Emden Leer University. And then we have the three companies that are involved as beneficiaries, which are Arkema and Merck, which are two large chemical companies. And we have Lugus, which is a relatively small game development company. And then we have more partner organizations. We have in total five partner organizations. So one is KVE, which is also a virtual reality company. One is BASF, very well-known chemical company. There's ACTA, which is a teaching organization for chemical engineering. We have Duisburg University, and we also have Bielefeld University.
I think one of the interesting things about the project is that although the companies such as Arkema, Merck, and BASF, I guess in some sense they're competitors, but they obviously saw the value in this project to contribute and come together and share resources.
Right. And it's true, in some cases they might be competitors, but basically on the chemical process and the chemical products that they're making. This project is about how to train employees, and that is about human resources, which is not the core of a chemical company, but it's, of course, an essential aspect of a chemical company, of any company. And in that sense, these companies like to work together to exchange information and change this learning trajectory in order to grow faster, basically.
Is there anything in particular that you've learned? I mean, the project's been going for 6 months or so now, or maybe 9 months. Right. Is there anything that you've come across already in that amount of time that you can see really benefiting the work you do in your university practice as a professor or in research?
Well, yeah, this is interesting because as a university professor, you're most of the time you're judged based on the content of the research that you're developing. You also have to teach, but we don't get that much of training on teaching. And so this project is very instructive to talk to psychologists and these computer scientists to and think about how do you teach? How do we effectively transfer knowledge? And so basically in my courses that I'm teaching, I'm becoming much more attentive to the way that I teach and the way that I try to convince students of, okay, this is important to understand.
If you were to compare the type of education you had when you were studying maybe your bachelor or master's or even during your PhD studies compared to how you lecture now or your colleagues do, is there much difference between those two different eras?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was trained basically more than 20 years ago. At that moment, internet was absolutely in its first steps or its first development stage. At this moment, you have so many abilities to find things on in the internet, to exchange information, and to find all kinds of examples, very illustrative examples of what you want to teach. So basically, when I'm now teaching, I often go on internet. I have links on my slides where things are being explained much more in a much more illustrated way than I could ever do. So that's definitely helping understanding and quick understanding of students.
And comparing what students are doing now than students in the future, particularly based on the work that is involved in the Charming project, would you dare to make a prediction about the students graduating or participating in university courses in 20 years?
Well, I think there's a number of quite interesting pathways that we're investigating in this project, which I think in 20 years will be kind of almost mainstream. One particular example is one problem that we have at universities is more and more students are studying at the university. So that means that in our case, we have practical laboratories or practical laboratory sessions, but we cannot accommodate so many students with sufficient number of hours to get into contact with labs. One of the topics that is being investigated is, are you able to develop a virtual lab where you do and where you instruct students to perform handling of chemicals in a lab setting but in a virtual lab setting. So that means that you would be able to accommodate as many students that you want, as long as you have the technical tools, meaning you have the goggles, you have the earphones, and so forth, which is probably much easier. At this moment, it might be still expensive, but this is also going to be decreasing in cost. But it might be technically much easier than building big labs with sufficient space for the students.
And do you think there might be some hesitation from some of the other people working in the chemical industry, either in industry itself or in academia or education, to adopt these technologies?
Well, there's of course always hesitation for new technologies. And I see two things there. First of all, is the hesitation of people that are not acquainted with these technologies. You might say the older generation is probably less acquainted with all these tools of virtual reality, Google Glass, and so forth, whereas the younger generation is much more into games and gamification. But that's going to grow out of that's not going to become a problem over time. That's going to solve itself over time. Another aspect is there are quite some people that are saying, okay, these simulations where you could train people in do not offer you the same environment as you in reality have. For example, you could argue that if you know that you're learning something in a simulator, it's not that bad when something blows up. You just start again. So the adrenaline, for example, in case that you're doing something potentially dangerous, is perhaps less present. But I do believe that with improving abilities, immersive technologies, this is also something that is going to be solved.
Okay. Tom, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Okay, so that was my interview with Tom van Gerven, the project coordinator of the Charming Project. Jesse, did you have any thoughts or comments on the discussion and the conversation that I had with Tom?
I really like the way he described the project. I think that he has a very good overview. He mentioned it. But one thing I found it very, very nice, it was the one term that he used, which is unusual. I think that's the best adjective to describe what we are doing, just not regarding the research, but also the composition of the group. You know, in my view, it brings a lot of charm and richness to it itself, because we have so many backgrounds and also different countries. So this diversity, I think it's very nice. You know, and actually in sciences, it's not so unusual to collaborate with other disciplines, but it's just normally more common to have a different scientific background. But in this project, I think that the wonderful part is that it brings people from different views of the world, so different backgrounds, different things. So it's quite challenging, but also very nice. And you, what do you think?
I completely agree. I didn't really have much of an understanding at any deep level of chemistry outside of what I learned at high school. And Having the chance to work with so many chemical engineers or chemists, and I'm still kind of learning the difference between those two things. But it's been fantastic, and it really, I think, I agree. It is an unusual bunch of people all working together with a common goal, and I guess that's one of the things. I mean, as an educator myself, and becoming an educational scientist, it is one thing that I notice about the field of educational sciences. Our role is really to explore the best way for people to learn, and people learn in all different sort of circumstances. And I think for me, not only is it different disciplines and different domains that are all collaborating on the project, but it's also different age levels. We have one work package that's looking at the younger years, so primary school and early high school. We have the secondary school, so later high school, later years in high school, and then even higher education. And then we have the employee training, and that's the work package I'm focusing on. So there's different topics that we're trying to explore, how best to teach or how best people can learn in chemical and chemistry education. But it's also different age levels, and that's that's also unusual, but it's also very, very interesting.
Yeah, and in my, I don't know, I sense that these different targets that we are looking at, it seems to be like we are taking not only one group of people, you know. So I don't know, it just gives me the sense that these immersive technologies are, you know, are going to be everywhere. So because it's not only in the industry or not only in the universities, everywhere with children, with the employees, with the students. So I don't know, I have this sense that it's going to be very big, but it's just, you know, it's kind of a guess because of course we don't know.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I don't see, I guess just the same way that the personal computer has impacted all aspects of human lives, particularly in learning, even primary school students as young as year one, so I guess that's 5 years old, are working on computers. So the technology itself, so immersive technology, suitable for any age, not just, games are not just for children, and let's say simulation training is not just for the workplace.
No, exactly, and a lot of characteristics of these technologies can be translated into other things. So I mean, like even a simulation, maybe you are not playing, but you are taking some elements from the games that you can use in order to make people learn better. So this is, yeah, this is something really interesting, and I found it very challenging, you know, because sometimes we think about certain areas like chemistry, just doing chemistry, or education and just teaching maybe, but now how we have to merge everything is so rich and so so interesting. So I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. I am interested. So you had a background in studying was it chemistry or chemical engineering at university?
I studied chemistry, but in my faculty it was also we have also chemical engineering, but I chose for chemistry.
Okay, so
yeah.
So this is an all new for me because I'm quite interested at a university level. How were you learning chemistry at university, and maybe how would you see that changing with the sort of technology that we're researching in this project?
Yeah, well, in my experience, for instance, in the university, we start together, so we are mixed with chemical engineers, so we all start with the same topics. You know, one semester of full chemistry and chemistry, but basic chemistry, but more physics and mathematics. And with the years, it changes and becomes more specialized. So chemistry we go more to the lab. We have more practice in the lab. And the chemical engineers, they work more with reactors and more calculations, more in the computer. So that's how, you know, in a very simplistic way, how we study it. But of course, each of us have to learn very abstract concepts. You know, they teach you about, for instance, a protein, which you cannot see. So you have to imagine yourself. In my case, I had to imagine, okay, I have to design a molecule for this specific protein, but I have no idea how this looks like, you know? So you have to really use your imagination to try to draw and, of course, use mathematics and all the calculations to see if this molecule is going to bind to this protein. But that's a very hard exercise if you only have a representation in 2D. And this representation might not be as accurate. So it's just an example, but it's one of the things that I really believe that these technologies can help, you know? Like students, when we are trying to understand a concept which is so difficult, and at least if you have a tool where you can visualize and you can use and you can turn around, then maybe it's not that hard anymore. And then you can go further, you know, because you don't have to spend 3 hours trying to see at the structure or thinking how it looks like. You have it there. And then from there, you start building your knowledge. So I think that's kind of my view of how this can be really helpful.
That's interesting, because I know a lot of the initial ideas that people have regarding immersive learning technologies is that we're able to make something that is traditionally or normally boring interesting and exciting. But I have seen some pushback in some sense within the particularly within our project, where this is not necessarily the thing that we're combating at a university level. Not only that, the content isn't necessarily the content being boring isn't necessarily the problem that immersive technologies can solve in the world of chemistry and chemical engineering, because typically people who are studying those topics actually find it fascinating.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's more of it more provides this ability to visualize something that is normally impossible to visualize, and that's in a sense the problem that's being solved. I think back to even when I have taught at primary school level, when we teach chemistry, actually chemistry is a really interesting and exciting topic to teach, because the students, while learning the scientific method, they are also engaging in activities that involve maybe, let's say, for example, bicarbon soda and vinegar. So this chemical reaction is actually very exciting. So in a sense, how we, I think we should not only look at immersive technologies such as virtual reality, for example, as an opportunity to make boring concepts exciting, but it's also enables us to actually make the things that are happening at a microscopic scale, for example in chemistry, much more easily communicated to the learner, be that at primary school or in your case at a university level.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's one of the main more intuitive things that can help, but of course might be there are other things, and I think that's very exciting to explore, you know, because this is just intuitive things that as a chemist, you know, this can really help. But I have thought about other things, you know, like maybe you can train skills, like instead of going to the lab and performing these dangerous experiments, maybe you can train in a virtual environment and then you can learn the skills in a kind of safe and virtual setup. So that's also another possibility, but this is what we need to explore. And I want to ask you, for then in educational sciences, what is your view? So how do you think this can help, not only in chemistry, but maybe in other things that you as a professor, what do you think?
I guess when you say professor, you mean a teacher, because I'm definitely not a professor.
Oh, you know, that's funny, because in Spanish we say profesor, which is the teacher. We call our professors in school professor, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, so, I think, well, it's quite interesting, and I've really been getting, I guess I'm 1 year now into the project, and I've been doing a lot of reading around, most recently actually, simulation-based training. And I think there's actually been a tremendous amount of research done into simulation-based training, which doesn't necessarily use any virtual reality, for example, or any augmented reality. It's just simply, let's say in the case of a chemical company, they'll have like pilot plants, where instead of running dangerous chemicals through a reactor, they're using water, high pressure water, or it might be heated or things like this. But it gives the employees a chance to practice on something in the physical world, which is somewhat replicating what they'll do when they're working in the real plant. So I think the benefits of virtual reality is this pilot plant can then be replicated in a digital form, presented in a head-mounted display. The employee can then practice this same task many times over. The different chemical reaction that they need to try to be creating can, I guess the reactions are endless depending on the person who's developing the software. That obviously that has to happen. But once it's developed, I mean, you can just copy and paste that across to 10, 50, 100, 1,000 headsets, and those employees can continuously practice that over and over again. And if the trainer decides, okay, this student has understands how to operate the reactor, change the valves, clean the valves, or do whatever they have to do in order to be competent at their job, instead of having to Once they're happy with that student at that level, then they can just immediately put them onto it to a new task, a new reaction, or whatever needs to be learnt. They don't have to. I imagine in a pilot plant, it's a very strenuous, difficult task to actually change the reactions that you're trying to mimic. So I think that's the nice thing that these technologies offer. I do think there's a lot of work that needs to happen before this is possible. I think what's really missing at the moment is the content, the training content. So how are we, is it possible to develop some type of software that enables some type of, let's say a trainer at one of the companies that's part of the project, let's say Merck, for example, who's a partner on the project, how can we get a trainer at this company to actually be able to develop their own content to follow their curriculum? So that's an interesting challenge, and I think in some ways a lot of the our fellow PhDs are developing guidelines for some type of immersive learning product. So, for example, I'm developing design guidelines for the presentation of learning analytics. So I think we're doing this research at a more foundational level, which will then hopefully be able to contribute in the long run to more scientifically valid designs of learning applications, and not just for the chemical industry, but I think actually for immersive learning, immersive learning technology in general.
Yeah, I agree. I agree that it's not only in chemistry. This is probably bigger, you know, and we have seen that in the events that we came together, for instance, in the VR days, like for in health and in the hospitals, for, you know, the pilots have been doing this for a long time already. So there are other areas that, of course, we cannot explore everything, but this is going to be a lot bigger.
Indeed. I just wanted to touch, maybe the last topic we can talk about regarding the interview of Tom was the fact, I found it quite interesting how, and very positive, how not only are there academic institutions involved in the project, but there's also institutions from industry. So Tom sort of listed the main beneficiaries. So they're the main people within the project. And there's, I think there's five different universities: KU Leuven, Newcastle University, Utrecht University, where I am, ITU in Copenhagen, University of Bielefeld, and Emden Lear. They're sort of together. And then you also have like the game studio, Lugus, and then the two chemical companies, Arkema and Merck. It's just, I think it's fantastic that there is this industry involvement alongside the academic side. Otherwise, it would feel a little bit strange doing this research into a technology that is really also need to be used outside of universities.
Yeah, and it's fantastic to see, you know, these big companies, because of course there are many, many companies in the world doing chemistry, but just the fact that we have the main players gives this sense that they are really interested. They see this benefit, and probably they can help and to enhance and to train and to use the technologies already. And I think that it's also interesting that even though they are competitors, they kind of see the same, they have the same vision, and they are trying to work together towards using the technology for their own. So that's also very, very important, I think.
Yeah. And also, it's probably important to mention also, so BASF or BASF is also involved as a partner organization. So a smaller involvement, but it's still there. I mean, of chemical companies around the world, I'd never heard of Merck, I'd never heard of Arkema, but they're absolutely enormous. So it's a bit, I guess if you're in the world of chemical engineering, you know of them, but I had heard of BASF. So yeah, I agree. The fact that these large companies, regardless if they're competing commercially or not, see a value in this project, I think it's I don't only think it says it, so it says a lot about the Charming project in general, or specifically, but in general, it also says that these companies see the potential of immersive learning technologies. I mean, from my experience, I get the feeling they don't really know how exactly it will be implemented into their companies and how it will exactly fit within their strategy. But they clearly have a vision and they have a clear understanding that, yes, these are important technologies. Yes, we want to invest in research how to best incorporate this into our practices. And I think that's a really, really positive sign for both for the chemical industry in Europe and the world, I guess, and also for VR, AR, and immersive tech in general.
Yeah, that's right.
So maybe this is a good place to end. I think we've covered quite a lot, and until our next podcast, I think it'll hopefully be coming sooner rather than later. Jesse, do you have any last comments before we wrap up?
Well, I just want to say that I'm really happy to be able to join this project, and I'm really happy to be sharing these thoughts with you, Tim. I think I've learned a lot from the teacher. And yeah, just let's wait for the next episode to see what else can we bring into the table and discuss it.
Fantastic. Okay, so thank you everybody for joining us on our very first episode of the Immersive Chemistry Podcast. And we'll be back soon with more episodes, more interviews, and more discussion.
Thank you.
The Charming Project and this podcast has received funding from the European Union's Horizon 2020 Research and Innovation Programme.